Chapter 13. Then, after passing, still clinging to the walls, the faced racks of the bills of last year's circus, I came to a backfield near a timber yard, where the circus itself had been, and where there was yet a sort of monkish tonsure on the grass, indicating the spot where the young lady had gone round upon her pet steed Firefly in her daring flight. Turning into the town again, I came among the shops, and they were emphatically out of the season. The chemist had no boxes of ginger beer powders, no beautifying seaside soaps and washes, no attractive scents, nothing but his great goggle-eyed red bottles, looking as if the winds of winter and the drift of the salt sea had inflamed them. The grocer's hot pickles, Harvey's sauce, Dr. Kitchener's zest, anchovy paste, Dundee marmalade, and the whole stock of luxurious helps to appetite, were hibernating somewhere underground. The china shop had no trifles from anywhere. The bazaar had given in altogether, and presented a notice on the shutters, that this establishment would reopen at Whitsuntide, and that the proprietor in the meantime might be heard of at Wild Lodge, East Cliff. At the sea bathing establishment, a row of neat little wooden houses 7 or 8 feet high, I saw the proprietor in bed in the shower bath. As to the bathing machines, they were how they got there, is not for me to say, at the top of a hill at least a mile and a half off. The library, which I had never seen otherwise than wide open, was tight shut, and two peevish bald old gentlemen seemed to be hermetically sealed up inside, eternally reading the paper. That wonderful mystery, the music shop, carried it off as usual, except that it had more cabinet pianos in stock, as if season, or no season, were all one to it. It made the same prodigious display of bright brazen wind instruments, horribly twisted, worth, as I should conceive, some thousands of pounds, and which it is utterly impossible that anybody in any season can ever play, or want to play. It had 5 triangles in the window, 6 pairs of castanets, and 3 harps, likewise every polka with a colored frontispiece that ever was published, from the original one, where a smooth male and female pole of high rank are coming at the observer with their arms akimbo, to the ratcatcher's daughter. Astonishing establishment, amazing enigma. 3 other shops were pretty much out of the season, what they were used to be in it. First, the shop where they sell the sailors' watches, which had still the old collection of enormous timekeepers, apparently designed to break a fall from the masthead, with places to wind them up, like fireplugs. Secondly, the shop where they sell the sailors' clothing, which displayed the old sou'westers, and the old oily suits, and the old pea jackets, and the old one sea chest, with its handles like a pair of rope earrings. Thirdly, the unchangeable shop for the sale of literature that has been left behind. Here, Dr. Faustus was still going down to very red and yellow perdition, under the superintendence of 3 green personages of a scaly humor, with excrescential serpents growing out of their blade bones. Here, the Golden Dreamer and the Norwood Fortune Teller were still on sale at 6 pence each, with instructions for making the dumb cake, and reading destinies in teacups, and with a picture of a young woman with a high waist lying on a sofa in an attitude so uncomfortable as, almost to account for her dreaming at 1 and the same time of a conflagration, a shipwreck, an earthquake, a skeleton, a church porch, lightning, funerals performed, and a young man in a bright blue coat and canary pantaloons. Here were Little Warblers and Fairburn's comic songsters. Here, too, were ballads on the old ballad paper, and in the old confusion of types, with an old man in a cocked hat, and an armchair, for the illustration to Will Watch the Bold Smuggler, and the Friar of Orders Gray, represented by a little girl in a hoop, with a ship in the distance. All these as of yore, when they were infinite delights to me. It took me so long fully, to relish these many enjoyments, that I had not more than an hour before bedtime, to devote to Madame Roland. We got on admirably together on the subject of her convent education, and I rose next morning with the full conviction that the day for the great chapter was at last arrived. It had fallen calm, however, in the night, and as I sat at breakfast I blushed to remember that I had not yet been on the downs. I a walker, and not yet on the downs. Really, on so quiet and bright a morning this must be set right. As an essential part of the whole duty of man, therefore, I left the chapter to itself for the present, and went on the downs. They were wonderfully green and beautiful, and gave me a good deal to do. When I had done with the free air and the view, I had to go down into the valley and look after the hops, which I know nothing about, and to be equally solicitous as to the cherry orchards. Then I took it on myself to cross-examine a tramping family in black, mother alleged, I have no doubt by herself in person, to have died last week, and to accompany 18 pence, which produced a great effect, with moral admonitions which produce none at all. Finally, it was late in the afternoon, before I got back to the unprecedented chapter, and then I determined that it was out of the season, as the place was, and put it away. I went at night to the benefit of Mrs. B. Wedgington at the theater, who had placarded the town with the admonition, "Don't forget it." I made the house, according to my calculation, 4 and 9 pence to begin with, and it may have warmed up, in the course of the evening, to half a sovereign. There was nothing to offend anyone, the good Mr. Baines of Leeds excepted. Mrs. B. Wedgington sang to a grand piano. Mr. B. Wedgington did the like, and also took off his coat, tucked up his trousers, and danced in clogs. Master B. Wedgington, aged 10 months, was nursed by a shivering young person in the boxes, and the eye of Mrs. B. Wedgington wandered that way more than once. Peace be with all the Wedgingtons from A to Z. May they find themselves in the season somewhere. A poor man's tale of a patent. I am not used to writing for print. What working man, that never labors less, some Mondays, and Christmas time and Easter time excepted, than 12 or 14 hours a day, is? But I have been asked to put down, plain, what I have got to say, and so I take pen and ink, and do it to the best of my power, hoping defects will find excuse. I was born nigh London, but have worked in a shop at Birmingham, what you would call manufactories, we call shops, almost ever since I was out of my time. I served my apprenticeship at Deptford, nigh where I was born, and I am a smith by trade. My name is John. I have been called Old John ever since I was 19 year of age, on account of not having much hair. I am 56 year of age at the present time, and I don't find myself with more hair, nor yet with less, to signify, than at 19 year of age aforesaid. I have been married 35 year, come next April. I was married on All Fool's Day. Let them laugh that will. I won a good wife that day, and it was as sensible a day to me as ever I had. We have had a matter of 10 children, 6 whereof are living. My eldest son is engineer in the Italian steam packet Mezzogiorno, plying between Marseille and Naples, and calling at Genoa, Leghorn, and Civita Vecchia. He was a good workman. He invented a many useful little things that brought him in nothing. I have 2 sons doing well at Sydney, New South Wales single, when last heard from. One of my sons, James, went wild, and for a soldier, where he was shot in India, living 6 weeks in hospital with a musket ball lodged in his shoulder blade, which he wrote with his own hand. He was the best looking. One of my 2 daughters, Mary, is comfortable in her circumstances, but water on the chest. The other, Charlotte, her husband run away from her in the basest manner, and she and her 3 children live with us. The youngest 6-year-old has a turn for mechanics. I am not a chartist, and I never was. I don't mean to say, but what I see a good many public points to complain of, still I don't think that's the way to set them right. If I did think so, I should be a chartist. But I don't think so, and I am not a chartist. I read the paper and hear discussion at what we call a parlor apostrophe in Birmingham, and I know many good men and workmen who are Chartists. Note, not physical force. It won't be took as boastful in me if I make the remark, for I can't put down what I have got to say without putting that down before going any further, that I have always been of an ingenious turn. I once got £20 by a screw, and it's in use now. I have been 20 years, off and on, completing an invention and perfecting it. I perfected of it, last Christmas Eve at 10 o'clock at night. Me and my wife stood, and let some tears fall over the model, when it was done, and I brought her in to take a look at it. A friend of mine, by the name of William Butcher, is a Chartist. Moderate. He is a good speaker. He is very animated. I have often heard him deliver that what is, at every turn, in the way of us working men, is, that too many places have been made, in the course of time, to provide for people that never ought to have been provided for, and that we have to obey forms, and to pay fees to support those places when we shouldn't ought. True, apostrophe delivers William Butcher, all the public has to do this, but it falls heaviest on the working man, because he has least to spare, and likewise because impediments shouldn't be put in his way when he wants redress of wrong or furtherance of right. Apostrophe note. I have wrote down those words from William Butcher's own mouth. W. B. delivering them fresh for the aforesaid purpose. Now, to my model again. There it was, perfected of, on Christmas Eve, gone nigh a year, at 10 o'clock at night. All the money I could spare I had laid out upon the model, and when times was bad, or my daughter Charlotte's children sickly, or both, it had stood still, months at a spell. I had pulled it to pieces, and made it over again with improvements, I don't know how often. There it stood, at last, a perfected model as aforesaid. William Butcher and me had a long talk, Christmas Day, respecting of the model. William is very sensible, but sometimes cranky. William said, what will you do with it, John? Apostrophe apostrophe I said, patent it. Apostrophe William said, I'll patent it, John. Apostrophe I said, by taking out a patent. Apostrophe William then delivered, that the law of patent was a cruel wrong. William said, John, if you make your invention public, before you get a patent, anyone may rob you of the fruits of your hard work. You are put in a cleft stick, John. Either you must drive a bargain very much against yourself, by getting a party to come forward beforehand with the great expenses of the patent, or you must be put about, from post to pillar, among so many parties, trying to make a better bargain for yourself, and showing your invention, that your invention will be took from you over your head. Apostrophe I said, William Butcher, are you cranky? You are sometimes cranky. Apostrophe William said, no, John, I tell you the truth. Apostrophe which he then delivered more at length. I said to W. B. I would patent the invention myself. My wife's brother, George Berry of West Bromwich, his wife unfortunately took to drinking, made away with everything, and 17 times committed to Birmingham jail before happy release in every point of view, left my wife, his sister, when he died, a legacy of £128.10, Bank of England stocks. Me and my wife never broke into that money yet. Note. We might come to be old, and past our work. We now agreed to patent the invention. We said we would make a hole in it, I mean in the aforesaid money, and patent the invention. William Butcher wrote me a letter to Thomas Joy, in London. T. J. is a carpenter, 6'4" in height, and plays quite well. He lives in Chelsea, London, by the church. I got leave from the shop, to be took on again when I come back. I am a good workman. Not a teetotaler, but never drunk. When the Christmas holidays were over, I went up to London by the parliamentary train, and hired a lodging for a week with Thomas Joy. He is married. He has one son gone to sea. Thomas Joy delivered from a book he had that the first step to be took in patenting the invention was to prepare a petition unto Queen Victoria. William Butcher had delivered similar and drawn it up. Note: William is a ready writer. A declaration before a master in chancery was to be added to it. That we likewise drew up. After a deal of trouble, I found out a master in Southampton Buildings, Chancery Lane, Nigh Temple Bar, where I made the declaration and paid 18 pence. I was told to take the declaration and petition to the Home Office in Whitehall, where I left it to be signed by the Home Secretary after I had found the office out, and where I paid £2.06. In 6 days he signed it, and I was told to take it to the Attorney General's chambers and leave it there for a report. I did so, and paid £4.04. Note: nobody all through ever thankful for their money, but all uncivil. My lodging at Thomas Joy's was now hired for another week, whereof 5 days were gone. The Attorney General made what they called a report, of course, my invention being, as William Butcher had delivered before starting, unopposed, and I was sent back with it to the Home Office. They made a copy of it, which was called a warrant. For this warrant, I paid £7.13.6. It was sent to the Queen to sign. The Queen sent it back, signed. The Home Secretary signed it again. The gentleman throwed it at me when I called, and said, "Now take it to the patent office in Lincoln's Inn." Apostrophe, I was then in my third week at Thomas Joy's, living very sparing, on account of fees. I found myself losing heart. At the patent office in Lincoln's Inn, they made a draft of the Queen's bill, apostrophe of my invention, and a docket of the bill. Apostrophe, I paid £5.10.6 for this. They engrossed 2 copies of the bill, one for the Signet Office, and one for the Privy Seal Office. Apostrophe, I paid £1.07.6 for this. Stamp duty over and above, £3. The engrossing clerk of the same office engrossed the Queen's bill for signature. I paid him £1.01. Stamp duty, again, £1.10. I was next to take the Queen's bill to the Attorney General again, and get it signed again. I took it, and paid £5 more. I fetched it away, and took it to the Home Secretary again. He sent it to the Queen again. She signed it again. I paid £7.13.6 more for this. I had been over a month at Thomas Joy's. I was quite wore out, patience and pocket. Thomas Joy delivered all this, as it went on, to William Butcher. William Butcher delivered it again to 3 Birmingham parlors, from which it got to all the other parlors, and was took, as I have been told since, right through all the shops in the north of England. Note: William Butcher delivered, at his parlor, in a speech, that it was a patent way of making Chartists. But I hadn't nigh done yet. The Queen's bill was to be took to the Signet Office in Somerset House, Strand, where the stamp shop is. The clerk of the Signet made a signet bill for the Lord Keeper of the Privy Seal. Apostrophe, I paid him £4.07. The clerk of the Lord Keeper of the Privy Seal made a Privy Seal bill for the Lord Chancellor. Apostrophe, I paid him £4.02. The Privy Seal bill was handed over to the clerk of the patents, who engrossed the aforesaid. I paid him £5.17.8. At the same time, I paid stamp duty for the patent, in one lump, £30. I next paid 4 boxes for the patent, apostrophe 9 and 6 pence. Note: Thomas Joy would have made the same at a profit for 18 pence. I next paid fees to the deputy, the Lord Chancellor's purse bearer, apostrophe £2.02. I next paid fees to the clerk of the Hanaper, apostrophe £7.13. I next paid fees to the deputy clerk of the Hanaper, apostrophe 10 shillings. I next paid to the Lord Chancellor again £1.11.6. Last of all, I paid fees to the deputy sealer and deputy chaff wax, $10.06. I had lodged a Thomas Joyce over 6 weeks, and the unopposed patent for my invention, for England only, had cost me £96.07. If I had taken it out for the United Kingdom, it would have cost me more than £300. Now, teaching had not come up, but very limited when I was young. So much the worse for me, you'll say. I say the same. William Butcher is 20 years younger than me. He knows 100 years more. If William Butcher had wanted to patent an invention, he might have been sharper than myself, when hustled backwards and forwards among all those offices, though I doubt if so patient. Note. William being sometimes cranky, and consider porters, messengers, and clerks. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.